now, fueled by facts and driven by truth. Broadcasting live from beautiful British Columbia, it's Roadkill Radio. And now here are your hosts, Gary Simpson, Terry O'Neill, and Ron Gray.
Hi, everyone. Ron Gray will be here shortly, later in the show. I'm Terry. This is Terry. And welcome to the 100th episode of Roadkill Radio. And as you can see, Carrie.
Yes, Terry.
We have decided to mark this by introducing a brand new set. And I hope you like it. It's outdoorsy, lots of road, kind of road runner type motif.
But so we figured it was very apropos for our Roadkill Radio.
So you might say that we've revved up, put a supercharger on our Roadkill Radio, put the mag wheels on, blown the exhaust, and
let's get turboed.
That's right, turboed as well. So using high octane fuel tonight and for the rest of the foreseeable future for Roadkill Radio. Thanks for joining us tonight. We have a great show lined up. Later in the show, we'll be doing something a little unusual. If you got our email blast out earlier today, you'll see that I'll be interviewing Carrie and Ron about their many years of activism dealing with parent rights in the school system.
Should I be nervous about this, Carrie? Well, will you be gentle with me?
Well, you know, there will be a few softballs thrown your way, but the odd slider, so keep your chin close.
Okay? I'm going to keep my eye close on you, Terry O'Neill.
There might be a little chin music coming your way as well. So, and all of this, of course, revolves around the situation at the Burnaby School Board here in Burnaby, British Columbia, where, according to the, we've been reporting on this a bit over the last few weeks, and the mainstream media are now reporting on it, that the Burnaby school system is attempting to put in a new
policy
protocol on gays, lesbians, transsexuals.
Well, you know, and it's interesting, Terry, because it's ignited the whole firestorm again, which is, as I said in an interview earlier today with CBC, is probably a good thing. Maybe this round, the discourse will be one that will truly benefit the schools and all the students
in
the school.
You know, if Christy Clark, the new Premier of British Columbia, and by the way, Christy faces a by-election in her riding in Vancouver tomorrow, expected to win, but it'll be the first by-election victory by a ruling party in 30 years if she does win.
Mm-hmm.
She talks constantly about having a family-first agenda, and what we're seeing is an uprising in the Burnaby School District of families, you know, not all families, families of a political persuasion perhaps, families of a religious background perhaps, families of a certain ethnic background perhaps.
Families that make up what it is
what
to
is
be a British Columbian,
exactly,
what it
you
is
know,
to be
like,
a Canadian.
So we'll find out if when we talk about a family-friendly agenda, we're just talking about one type of family, or if Christy Clark and the government, because the government, the provincial government, is ultimately responsible for the school boards in British Columbia, whether or not she's wanting to listen to all British Columbians and all types of families as well. So that's going to be very interesting. There will be a therapy moment later in the show as well, just before we get into the Burnaby stuff.
And I've missed our therapy sessions.
Yes.
I was away last week.
Yes, I know. And you know what? I can't really have therapy with Ron when Ron's sitting in here. He's just not as therapeutic as you are.
Well, and you know what? I have to confess, Terry, when you find therapy in me, there's some bizarre thing that happens that brings therapy to my world.
Isn't that something?
We have a mutual therapy thing.
Yes, right. Mutual therapeutic moments. MTMs.
Here on Roadkill.
That's
Radio,
right. Okay.
And only on Roadkill Radio.
That's the only time it happens, I guarantee you that. So that'll be fun, and it'll be on one of my favorite subjects. And in just a few minutes, we will be talking to our first guest of the evening. You know, when we're looking for somebody to kick off this show that sort of linked into what the major part of the show will be about, families and that agenda, I went through a lot of my news contacts and a lot of the most recent news events that have gone on, and certainly one that caught my attention was a conference that took place in Ottawa, Ontario last week, sponsored by the Institute of Marriage and Family Canada, a great organization.
They do amazing work.
We've had their representatives on our show several times over the last few years during our first 100 shows. And they put on a conference last week called Transforming the Way Canadians Think About family, and some they had several speakers, and two of the speakers especially caught my attention. One was from New Zealand, and one was from Sweden, and both of these are liberal democracies, and both of them are progressive countries, and we want to what those speakers had to say I found very interesting, and here now to talk to us about that conference and about those two speakers is the executive director of the Institute of Marriage and Family Canada, Mr. Dave Quist. Hello, Dave.
Hi, Terry. How are you this evening?
Fine. How are you tonight?
Good to be with you.
Good. We're joined by Carrie Simpson. I told you Carrie would be here. I also said that Ron Gray would be here, but Ron is not here yet. He'll be coming later in the show. So just Carrie and I will be talking to you for the
next little while. Hi, Dave.
Thank you. Now, Mr. Quist, Dave, this conference last week, Transforming the Way Canadians Think About Family, what was the impetus behind putting this conference together? What were you trying to prove or to show?
Well, the IMFC hosts an annual conference in Ottawa, and each of our conferences takes an approach of looking for speakers that are doing some cutting-edge research, that can bring new insights into social policy specific to marriage and family, the issues around children and child rearing and so on. And we've done that each of the last 5 years that we've been in operation. And this year, as we started to develop the theme and look at potential speakers, we started to look at the two countries you mentioned in your intro, Sweden and New Zealand. And over the years, we've actually developed some contacts in both of those countries. Sweden, because of their work in child rearing and child care, and it's often held up as this utopian model that if we only did things in the Swedish way, that we would all have perfect children and things like that. And New Zealand, because they've actually made some changes in social policy around the issue of spanking, or as they call it, smacking your child, as a form of discipline, as well as legalizing prostitution. And they've also made a couple other social policy changes as well that we wanted to hear from Jonas Himmelstrand of Sweden and Greg Fleming of New Zealand and ask them to present what's going on in their own countries.
Yeah, because this is important for Canada and our listeners in the U.S. as well, because these are the sorts of trends, the sorts of legal initiatives, the sort of legal rulings that sort of political realities and motivations that come out of the left that are affecting North America as well. And these are fights that take place a lot. Carrie.
Well, more than North America, I mean, these assertions that are rarely backed up with any kind of studies that actually support what people are saying are even being adopted by our courts. I mean, we saw that here in Canada itself, Terry. You know, the fact that corporal discipline, when using an implement, is now illegal in Canada. So, you know, the good old wooden spoon theory has, you know, and where these rationalizations come from and these ideas get adopted from, quite often is because somebody throws out, well, this is what they've done in Sweden, but there's been no research to support the aftermath.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's very true. And in fact, the research is actually saying quite the opposite. Jonas is a businessman. He has created his own institute and doing research around that and gathering together research around these very important social policy issues. And in his words, he said that there's becoming a rediscovery of the family, the institution of family, or in what is a very secular, non-traditional, and non-conservative country. And there is a reawakening of family going on there because as he called it as well, the biggest social experiment in the 20th century, that being Sweden, is not having good positive results, and we all need to wake up and hear what those challenges, those poor results actually are, and apply them back to not only Sweden, but as you said, Kerry, we need to be able to bring that information back to our own country, Canada.
Well, we certainly see here in Canada that the NDP especially and the Liberal Party were both big backers of national daycare plans, of government spending to get more daycare, and therefore more impetus for men and women to leave their children in these state-run daycare facilities at an ever earlier age. I just to get our listeners to understand sort of the overall impetus of what Jonas Himmelstrand was talking about. I'm going to quote from a story in LifeSite News that appeared yesterday, the excellent Canadian website, that I think really encompasses the main thrust of what he's talking about or did talk about. Despite the material wealth, low child poverty, subsidized daycare, free health care, and high life expectancy, Sweden is riddled with stress-related health problems in adults, declining psychological health and school results in youth, a high number of people on sick leave, and an inability for parents to connect with their children, which all points downward. And I think, you know what, the last thing there is what got me. Of all the stuff that I read about that came out of your conference, when I read this about the inability of parents to connect with their children and everything that flows from that, I said, this guy is on to something.
Mm-hmm. Well, especially when we know that parents are the greatest influencer in children's lives. We think of youth pastors at churches. If you're attending church, we think of teachers in school, and those are all important figureheads in a child's life. But when you actually ask children who the most important people are in their lives in terms of decision making and influencers, it comes right back to mom and dad.
Yeah, but Can I ask you something on that point? Because
Sure. Maybe
this is where Sweden and some of the other countries have lost it. And not too long ago, we were talking about, well, to use the roadkill radio term, the angry daycare generation. And it was in conjunction with Alex Schenberg from the Euthanasia Prevention Coalition with, you know, when you lose that connect and like Terry, and the article, that strikes me. What an interesting observation to make, that children can't connect with their parents. But is that a direct factor of parents abdicating their responsibilities? I mean, when we talk about parents being the most influential individuals in their children's lives, are those parents who take the time to be with their children? Because that's not happening in a lot of homes these days in Canada.
Well, that's true, and just reflecting back on Sweden, what Jonas did tell us is that there are no babies under the age of one in daycare. All parents have 14 months of parental leave, 2 months of which must be taken by the father, and the remaining 12, or up to the remaining 12, taken by the mother. But however, the flip is the exact opposite for children that are between 18 months and 5 years old. So all those early years of development that mums and dads play a crucial role in, 92% of those children are actually in daycare in Sweden right now. 92%. So virtually
wow.
All children are being raised during those formative years by somebody else.
And it's my understanding in Sweden that the tax system is really penal in terms of if you do want to have a stay-at-home spouse to look after that child, it's very, very difficult. That it makes a lot more sense financially because of the taxes and because of the money that the state subsidizes the daycare with to put your child there. There's a lot of not only social pressure, but also financial pressure.
You're exactly right there, Terry. Daycare is largely 90% subsidized in Sweden, which makes it not free, but virtually free. And the state itself will send people out to, essentially social workers, out to a home, to see how a new mother is doing. And one of the questions that Jonas mentioned that they will ask at the home is, have you already put your child's name into a daycare of your choice? Not just have you considered this, but have you placed his name or her name onto that waiting list right now so that in a year you can put your child into daycare and you can go back to work. And if you have not done that and you're saying, no, I'm going to stay home with my child, you are thoroughly discouraged from doing that by the state itself, which is frightening. It takes a whole element of choice and parental responsibility away from the parent and back into the state's hands again.
Yeah, and when you're saying that, you talk about the subsidy that goes, it's a $20,000 a year per child subsidy. And where does that money come from? Hey, it comes from taxes, right?
Exactly,
so
right.
So the families, the workers are being taxed, and the money is getting cycled back into subsidizing this. So really, if you want to have one parent stay at home, the parent who's out working is paying a lot of taxes, and a lot of that tax money is going to subsidize daycares that they're not taking advantage of, and it's very, very difficult to hire taxes. Certainly, if the subsidy wasn't there for this $20,000 a year for all the parents, for all the spaces in daycare, the taxes would be a lot lower, and it would be easier for a single parent to stay home, so one parent to stay home and one parent to work.
That's correct. And there are strong social implications. You alluded to that a little bit earlier as well, that it's very interesting. The level of sick leave amongst women in particular is extremely high, both from a psychological but also a physical illness perspective, that many women are taking time out of their workday, weekly or daily or whatever it may be, to be at home with their children. Many would prefer to be with their children, but the state system, both fiscally and socially, applies economic and social pressure on them to be back at work and to leave their child with somebody else for daycare.
You know, it's interesting that you raise that, because I know in North America now, heart disease and stress in women is one of the fastest rising medical concerns.
Yes.
You know, and so we have all this evidence supporting that this may be unhealthy for not only the children, but for the physical health of women and the family unit, because, you know, the family unit works really, really well when it's allowed to work the way it should. Is there any kind of revolution or revolt going on in Sweden?
Well, Jonas talked that there are ways that there is a reawakening with family values there. It probably wouldn't exactly mirror what North American family values have been, but they've been under a social experiment, as he called it, for so many years, that it shifted that whole game plan for them as well. Can you also imagine that as those children grow up that have had minimal contact with their moms and dads, that as they become parents, their parenting skills are actually extraordinarily low? So, in fact, the next generation, and no doubt those are starting to become apparent now as the early children are growing up and are becoming parents, they don't have the parenting skills necessary to raise their children as well. So it becomes self-perpetuating, a downward spiral at that point as well.
Well, you know, it's interesting because we talk about parenting skills. Well, contrary to just even our natural inclinations, and I'll speak as a mother, because, you know, maternal instincts, when they're allowed to be fully embraced, are really, really powerful instincts. But we have a culture here in North America that counsels young women, young mothers, against those feelings. They say, no, abandon your baby, which goes very contrary to, you know, I will kill anybody who touches this child in a harmful way. You know, sorry, that's just my natural inclination.
I know, yes, I know.
It's really not, there's not much gray area in how I do life.
Yes, I've experienced that. Yes.
And I make no apologies for it either.
You don't need to.
And you should, I think.
We accept you for who you are.
Thank you.
of interest, about 5 years ago, just before we opened the doors, the IMFC did a survey around child care responsibilities and preferences across Canada. We looked at urban and rural. We looked at East Coast, West Coast, and everything in between. And if you ask the question of what type of child care would you like, you get one set of answers, and that's the answers that we usually hear about national daycare and provincial responsibility and things like that. But if you add in one other option there, which we did in our survey of, would you prefer to stay at home with your child or send them to daycare, 82% of everybody, whether it's urban, rural, doesn't matter what part of the country, consistently 82% of the people said, if I could, I'd rather stay home with my children.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the missing link, I think, when we look at whether it's during a federal election, as we just finished up, and we're talking about a national daycare program, or here in the province of Ontario or in your province of British Columbia, they're talking about full-day kindergarten programs, which is really just another form of daycare.
Well, they're not talking about it. They've implemented
it. Exactly.
At hundreds of millions of dollars of cost to us, Dave. And this is where, you know, I actually earlier in the day today in helping with another situation gave a father the license to be righteously angry, you know. And maybe that's going to be the solution to what ails this nonsense and this propaganda, because it seems that the stakeholders in this game are not the best interest of children or the families. It's the job creation aspect of things, to get as many people employed, as many people involved in unions, as much regulation going on. I mean, the whole child care industry has become exactly that, an industry.
We
can't pick and choose who our children are going to reside with, because we need another government to assist us in this.
Jonas had a very interesting quote, and it wasn't picked up by the interview that you mentioned earlier, Terry, but I wrote it down because it struck me so clearly. And he said that when politics takes over family, every decision becomes politicized. And I think that applies exactly to what you're saying, Carrie, in terms of when the state is so involved in all aspects of the family, everything that we do becomes a political question. And so the daycare industry is exactly that. It becomes a job, whether it's unionized or not, whether it becomes formalized or not, it all becomes very political in its decision-making process. And we do need to wake up as parents and say, hold it, there's something else that we can do here. There's something else that we can take responsibility for, and that's our own families, our own responsibility. And you sort of said, alluded to the mama bear aspect there, and that's very true. And we need to be able to sit up and say, no, this is not how I'm going to raise my family. I'm taking responsibility
this
for
is
my children.
This can be a very political issue, obviously, in Sweden. Politics is permeated through right down into the very core of the family here. Your conference took place just a couple of days after the federal election, which returned a conservative majority government in Ottawa to govern our country. Do you see this new government this new majority government that's taken root in Ottawa as one that is sympathetic to, or has an ear to the sort of, gives an ear to the sort of issues that you are raising, the sort of important points that you took out of this presentation about Sweden and resonates within the caucus and within the cabinet of this government, or do you see that this government is just going along the same line as a lot of other governments in Canada, slow and sometimes fast trot to the left?
Well, I think there's a couple of different parts of that, actually. One, I found it very interesting that all three of the federal parties, or the major federal parties, all talked about family a lot during this campaign. The Liberals had their family pack, the Conservatives introduced family income splitting and support for seniors. The NDP had some similar programs as well. And so this is the first campaign in many years that I recall that they've actually been talking about social policy, specifically family policy, versus just simply talking about economic policy as well. And I think there's several reasons for that. One, I don't want to toot our horn too loudly, but I think that along with others, we've played a contributing role in ensuring that family and marriage policy is always in the forefront of what MPs are seeing and reading about and deciding and talking about. These are the men and women that are making decisions that will impact each and every one of our families, for better or for worse. And so for the past 5 years, we've been pushing very hard on several main issues. One of them was family income splitting.
Right.
And so two budgets ago, we saw that the Conservative government introduced pension splitting for seniors. And we said, that's a good start. Let's talk about families now as well. And last year they introduced ways that would support low-income families in the budget as well. And we said, again, that's another good step forward. Let's continue to talk about family income splitting. So that was introduced at this time. The one caveat that they said there is we're not going to actually introduce it because there is an expense involved. We know that. But they're not going to introduce it until the budget is actually balanced. We said, okay, but let's be careful that we don't have other things come in the way of this program. Don't just throw this bare bone out there without actually following up on it. And so we'll be there to remind the government over the next couple of years as we get closer to a balanced budget that you made this promise, We need it to support families, and let's continue. In terms of with the majority government now, I think that there are a number of MPs. Obviously, we've had a lot of new MPs, and so I have not had the pleasure of meeting them yet.
And some of the constituents haven't had the pleasure of meeting them either.
Some of those MPs haven't even been to their constituents.
That's right. Anyway, couldn't resist that one.
Sad but true, and well said.
Right.
We don't know who the cabinet members are yet. So it's very early days to talk about those specific issues. But what will take place over the next couple of weeks and months is that we will ensure that all those new MPs in particular are well aware of the policy issues that we at the Institute of Marriage and Family have talked about and what we've been promoting, and give them the research that supports that as well.
Dave, I know there's a pro-life caucus among... Mm-hmm. Is it a caucus among the conservatives, or is it a general pro-life organization?
No, it crosses all parties, actually.
Okay.
I don't attend those meetings.
Okay.
I'm not asked to attend them, but I know that caucus exists, and it's cross-party, apolitical,
Well, all right, good. I'm wondering, is there a possibility, or should there be, or maybe one exists, a caucus of... I'm gonna say that we're socially conservatives here. Social conservatives on the issue of family. We respect the traditional family. We see the value of a stay-at-home parent. Certainly one of the policies would be income splitting. Another policy would be lower taxes. Another policy would be more freedom to stay at home. Mm-hmm. Keep the government out, more freedom in choosing what to sort of schools to have, things, all sorts of stuff like that. And you could probably list it better than I can. Is there any sort of cross-party grouping of socially conservative MPs who would
respect
this sort of thing?
Not that I've heard of or been familiar with, no.
Yeah, okay.
The closest actually was back a number of years ago in the late 90s, early 2000, when the Reform Party was actually in mostly from Western Canada, and Eric Lowther from Calgary actually had a what he called a family caucus, and they were what they did is in through his office is they looked at every piece of legislation that then the Liberal government was bringing forward, and evaluated it from a family perspective: is this good for families, or negative for families, or neutral? So out of his office, they would put out a talking point that talked about the value or the negative impact on families, and those MPs could then, as a part of their debates, talk to that accordingly. We've done something similar through the office here. We like that principle, and so when we, not so much on specific bills, although we have made comment there, we put what we call quick stats up on our website, and so when we're talking about, you mentioned Alex just a few minutes ago from euthanasia prevention. When we talk about divorce issues or euthanasia issues or marriage issues, MPs or their staff or media can go to quick stats on our website and just quickly see what are the bullet points of that. What does Stats Can say about the statistics of where families are in marriage? What are the issues around child rearing and things like that? And so we've been trying to ensure that members of Parliament hear and see those issues very, very easily and quickly. And we will certainly continue that with the new MPs.
Excellent.
As well.
Dave, I want to ask you something, because just in listening to you talk, you know, I'm looking at, and later in the show we're going to be talking about some issues that are happening in the public education system. And I remember once one person asked me, I was speaking to a large group somewhere, and said, Carrie, what if you could do one thing in Canada to bring about change, what would you do? I said, well, give me the public education system for 18 years.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm thinking, because well, here at Roadkill, we're very involved in what's going on in the public education systems across Canada. And, you know, this business about treating everybody equally, whether or not the unit is as equal as another, is, you know, such a disservice to children. And you know, this is where I remember asking a teacher, and it was on the issues of homosexual same-sex marriage. And she says, well, you know, this is, people have a right to marry who they want and all the rest of it. And this was a teacher. I said, well, when was the last time
you told children in your classroom about the importance of marriage, the stability between a man and a woman to provide a home and a family. She says, well, we're not allowed to teach about that.
Mm.
You know, are we losing out on a huge opportunity? And I know Terry called this social conservative. Well, I'm going to be a little bit more blunt than that. I'm a self-centered conservative. I don't want to keep paying for other people's mistakes. I don't want to keep paying for other people's daycare because they don't want to take care of their kids. I mean, and I'm very blunt about that. I'll help anybody who needs it out, as I have in the past, Dave. But, you know, this industry of dysfunction that has been generated in this nation shows no end in sight. And I think it's at some point we have to put the brakes on this. So well, social conservative or self-centered, you know, this is, you know, ironically, my position, I think, is far healthier for this nation.
Mm-hmm. Well, I tend to agree with much of what you said there, Carrie. And the you know, could I do any one thing? Well, there's a number of things I'd love to see happen, actually. You know, education system is a good part of that. Freedom for parents to make the best decisions for their children is such an important thing as well.
Crucial.
And giving the parents the financial opportunities, you know, with lowering taxes and things of that nature, to keep more money in their own pocket so they can make decisions that are best for their kids. You know, it's multifaceted, and there are so many issues that the politicians are what I call the decision makers, those people that are making decisions or influencing public policy, that have bought certain propaganda that actually is not based in good social science data and research. You know, is whether we look at domestically or to Sweden or just to talk about childcare, we need to be very aware that we're not having some good outcomes here.
Mm.
You know, often, you know, the Quebec model is often looked at here in Canada. Well, in Quebec, kids are safe, but they're not really learning any more than anything else. And the subsidized program is coming out of the pockets of the rest of Canadians, quite frankly, as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so the program is not looking at what's in the best interest of children and families as a whole. And we need to change that, and we're take baby steps if we have to start with, but we need to be making some good progress on this file very soon.
Good. If you can hold that thought for a second, I just want to take the time at the top of the hour here to remind our listeners that you are listening, of course, to Roadkill Radio, our 100th anniversary show with our new special set, which I'm sure the people at this new Sun TV News Network are going to be jealous as all get out, because they are so blah over there. They got some good personalities, but their set, not as good as ours.
Yeah, we're not blah. No
right.
Blah allowed with
that's
Roadkill
right.
Radio.
So Roadkill Radio, and I urge our listeners to send us emails if they have any questions, comments, queries, or anything else starting with the hard C, to roadkillradio@live.ca. You can also call in on air at 604-525-4167. We are talking with Dave Quist, Executive Director of the Institute of Marriage and Family Canada, and we've been talking a lot about about the role of politics in the family, but as I think moving on to one of your other keynotes at your conference from last week, Dave Greg Fleming from
mm-hmm.
New Zealand and the Maxim Institute, he talked about issues such as the legalization of prostitution and the ban on spanking, that if they were to come about in Canada, that likely through the courts, not through Parliament. And that's another issue as well, judicial activism. Let's talk about what Mr. Fleming from the Maxim Institute in New Zealand said observed as some of the consequences of what's happening in that country, because especially of legalization of prostitution.
Well, the issue of prostitution has been around for several years in New Zealand at this point. It was really a coercion process going through their parliament. They did not look at many of the social aspects of the consequences of women being in prostitution, the impact on family values and so on. And when they when the debate was going through the parliament, they looked at it strictly, quote unquote, from an economic standpoint.
Oh,
and how you could possibly do that is just mind boggling. I mean,
maybe they just want to increase the gross domestic product, and that's pretty gross.
But ironically, Dave, isn't that exactly what they're doing with children in daycare? You know, let's free up mom to go work and to hell with the kids.
Well, you know, we're going to go on a little tangent here just a second, because another thing, our wonderful new premier in British Columbia has just announced a new program to fund people to get off of their smoking habit, and she's going to provide nicotine patches or drugs to help people kick smoking. And, you know, did you know that, Terry? You didn't.
Well,
but anyway, it's just another example of the more deeply the government gets involved in providing various services such as Medicare, the more they're going to want to interfere in your lives and spend even more money, because everything will have a economic rationale now, because, of course, tobacco addiction leads to all sorts of health problems when you're later in life, so we're going to spend more money now to try to prevent that. And my goodness, what happened to personal responsibility? What happened to, you know, anyway, so that was a tangent, and we'll get back onto this
right
now.
Well, that's a good tangent, yeah.
Yes, sir. Legalized prostitution. So
okay, so we have the state looks at the interest in New Zealand of the economic benefit, forget all the social fallout from it, and that's how they've based decisions there?
Well, I don't think, I hope that's not how they based all their decisions, but certainly in this issue there was an agenda at work. And I think we need to remember, we just talked about our federal election and Sweden and New Zealand, that there are some people that have an agenda, and they will force their agenda through if at all possible, whether it takes overnight or whether it takes 20 years. And in this case, it took some time, but there were some people that certainly had an agenda, and they pushed it through Parliament and managed to coerce enough people to vote their way. It was a very close vote, and but the outcome was that the prostitution is legalized. One of the questions we asked Greg before he came up, actually, in preparation, was, he said, what are the social implications that have come out of this now that it's actually been put in place? And he said, well, you can probably guess the obvious ones. However, it's really too early to tell all the ramifications and to actually do the research to in order to, you know, quantitatively show what the actual results are. But socially, you know, we know that there are women that are in bad situations, that are using prostitution to deal with drug addictions or alcohol addictions, or being forced into it by a husband, boyfriend, whatever, that are in strictly for the money, not caring for the women that are actually involved in this activity. So that's all very similar to what we see in Canada, and yet they've legalized it in New Zealand, and here in Province Ontario there is a court case going through right now that may in effect legalize prostitution, at least in the Province of Ontario, but that would have ramifications across the country.
Oh, it
as
certainly
well
would.
So
yes, absolutely.
We're facing the same issues here.
Mm-hmm.
Dave, is there have we come to a time in this nation where common sense, civilly minded individuals just need to say, enough of this, we're done with it, let's just take back our democracy and let's just be done with all the nonsense?
Terry, that's what we're doing on this show. That's what Dave Crist is doing. You're absolutely right. I'm answering it for Dave, but Dave,
that's so good of you.
Thank you. You are so right, and I wanted
Shouldn't
to interject
the
here.
Open
I
up want
to interject
center?
Here because you used the word common sense, and earlier in the show I was talking about social conservatism, and you were talking about, well, maybe self-centered conservatism. I've got a new expression we can use, common sense conservatism. That's what we can use now. Let's forget about social conservatism, so-cons, that's kind of old hat.
Good one, Terry.
I've gone through the era of being a paleo-conservative as well, which was kind of fun. A theocon as well. Ron, you're more of a theocon. Ron, our next, he's sitting in the green room
well,
right
I'm
now.
Well, I'm glad I brought clarity to
yes,
this finally, Terry.
I think we can all rally around Dave in Ottawa, Ron in the green room, Kerry, across from me here, and Terry, who has gone through different camps. We can all say that we are common sense conservatives, and I think that's what we need. We're going to start a
civil
movement.
I like civil conservative.
Common sense, civil.
It's funny that you
say that, Terry, because I'll just end on this note. One of our other guests, Dr. Brad Wilcox, who is a sociologist from the University of Virginia, and has done some great cutting-edge research around the issue of the difference between moms and dads and how they raise children and so on. But he opened up his talk on Thursday by saying that his grandmother had what you just said, common sense, that the issues that we are studying and talking about today, she would just say, are you crazy? Mm. And you know, she'd know exactly what the answer is right away. But he said, here I am, a PhD and well-versed and doing research on things that my grandmother knew 50 years ago just off the top of her head. And I think that's so true, that the common sense has left us in many different ways. If any of your listeners would like to see and or listen to any of our guest speakers, it's all going to be on our website in just the next day or two, imfcanada.org. And they're more than welcome to download or to look at those videos and those audio portions and hear what those speakers have to say directly for themselves as well.
Right. I think we've got a link to it on our website as well. So
terrific.
People can go to Roadkill Radio if they don't want to go to your site and find their way there. imfcanada.org. Thank you very much, Dave. I know you stayed up late to join us tonight, and we are most appreciative. Common Sense Conservatives.
Let's do a vote.
Okay, well,
I'm a civil conservative.
Maybe we'll put that to a vote.
Don't kick me off.
Okay. Well, you're being uncivil now. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you. All the best.
Okay,
good night, Dave.
Bye. That was Dave Quist, the executive director of the Institute of Marriage and Family Canada.
And they do good work, Terry O'Neill.
They certainly do.
We've had, like you said, several of their spokespeople.
Right.
And every time I think I just get kind of excited that there is that kind of thinking making its way influencing Parliament in Ottawa.
They're just, I think, 5 years old is what he said, and they're associated with the sort of political action arm of Focus on the Family, which is more of the educational, compassion, understanding, counseling, advice for families, a supportive group that the Institute of Marriage and Family Canada is doing a great job, has carved out a niche for itself very well.
A needed niche.
A needed niche.
A needed niche.
We'll go with the alliteration there. So.